Good evening, it's Tucker Carlson. One of the first things you realize when you step outside the noise for a few days is how many genuinely nice people there are in this country. Kind and decent people, people who really care about what's true, and a bunch of hilarious people also, a lot of those. It's gotta be the majority of the population, even now. So that's heartening. The other thing you notice when you take a little time off is how unbelievably stupid most of the debates you see on television are. They're completely irrelevant. They mean nothing. In 5 years, we won't even remember that we had them. Trust me, as someone who's participated. And yet at the same time, and this is the amazing thing, the undeniably big topics, the ones that will define our future, get virtually no discussion at all. War, civil liberties, emerging science, demographic change, corporate power, natural resources. When was the last time you heard a legitimate debate about any of those issues? It's been a long time. Debates like that are not permitted in American media. Both political parties and their donors have reached consensus on what benefits them, and they actively collude to shut down any conversation about it. Suddenly, the United States looks very much like a one-party state. That's a depressing realization, but it's not permanent. Our current orthodoxies won't last. They're brain dead. Nobody actually believes them. Hardly anyone's life is improved by them. This moment is too inherently ridiculous to continue, and so it won't. The people in charge know this. That's why they're hysterical and aggressive. They're afraid. They've given up persuasion. They're resorting to force. But it won't work. When honest people say what's true, calmly and without embarrassment, they become powerful. At the same time, the liars who've been trying to silence them shrink, and they become weaker. That's the iron law of the universe. True things prevail. Where can you still find Americans saying true things? There aren't many places left, but there are some, and that's enough. As long as you can hear the words, there is hope. See you soon.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Carl Hamers back on the show. He returns to discuss a series of articles he's written over the past several months, obscuring the Jewish issue in alt media, now media, and also the Tucker Carlson affair, his ouster from Fox News, and perhaps the intrigues behind that event. Carl is, of course, the author of COVID Culprits, an Inquest Chronicle. I think the last time we spoke, we actually talked about that book. Do you want to plug that book more? Or?
Oh, yeah, always.
How can people get it? What's the best way to get it?
I'm recommending people get it through the Barnes Review. The website is barnesreview.com. I hope I get that right. Is it org or com? You can find it.
I'll find a link. When I post it. So I'll post it. Okay, so this series, Obscuring the Jewish Issue in the Media. Want to give our audience an idea of what that's all about, or does the title kind of tell us?
Well, there's some origins to the idea.
Mm-hmm.
The very first of these occurred in March 7th, 2021, so it's been 2 years. And I was following the work of Dr. Joseph Mercola and also Children's Health Defense, which is the outlet of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.,
mm-hmm.
you know, during the plandemic or the scamdemic.
Yeah, you cover this in your book a little bit too, right? Yeah, so there's some overlap there, if I recall.
Let me think a minute. Is this essay in the book?
Well, maybe we just talked about it. I remember we were talking about it.
It should be.
Yeah, I think it is actually, because I remember coming across it. I know I read about it. I know I read it somewhere independent of the series, so.
Yeah, it should be. You know, that was what inspired me. I saw that Dr. Mercola wrote an essay pointing out the major media companies that were basically censoring him and slandering him and this kind of online warfare against Mercola. And he mentions the Publicis Group and NewsGuard, these like major media gatekeepers, and the Paley Center for Media. So I had the idea at that point to explore, you know, knowing the Jewish control of media generally. I thought I'd look into this and see just how much Jewish control there was of these three things, Publicis Group, NewsGuard, and the Paley Center. You know, I found it was overwhelming, almost entirely Jewish controlled. I call it NewsGuard, JewsGuard. The Paley Center for Zio Media, I call it, you know, and these are appropriate names. But the point was, Mercola wouldn't, he wouldn't observe that. And he must have known. I mean, he and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. are not stupid. They're not unaware. They couldn't have failed to identify their enemies, basically in the media, as Jewish. But they didn't write about it. So I maintain that they are obscuring the Jewish issue in media.
Now, is this done, think, out of fear, or is it something they're kind of willing obscurantists, if you will, or they just realize that at this time right now you just can't meet it head on like that?
I'll read a quote from my essay to answer that. Joseph Mercola, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., their staffs and supporters are not fools. They could not have missed the obvious overwhelming Jewish representation among their opponents. Mercola and Children's Health Defense are willing to wage a media battle against big pharma, public health agencies like the World Health Organization and the CDC, and the entire medical cartel, but not against Jews. They most likely engage in obscurantism of the Jewish problem in the entire COVID phenomenon out of a perceived need for self-protection. So,
Just right out of the Bible for fear of the Jews, right?
yes. Then I go on to say, but how wise is it to fail to identify the overwhelming ethnic component of one's enemies? You know, that's not safe either, to obscure our own clear view of, you know, who is really the major enemy of mankind.
But not in the long run, definitely. Right.
Right, exactly.
Day to day, it could, put it off.
I kind of suggest that, you know, like it's not safe to expose them directly, but it's also not safe to obscure it. So it's really kind of a impasse, which I don't engage in. I'll face it squarely.
Yeah, the idea of the media, of course, people who know the history, particularly mass media, right? That's what we're really talking about with the development of, well, first mass printing, but then really radio and broadcasting with television, and of course with the their hijacking of the of filming, right? And the development of Hollywood, and many people have written how their influence in Hollywood has actually shaped America. There's a book, Empire of Their Own. You know, where the author brags about the Jewish influence in shaping modern America. There's Yuri Slutsky's book, The Jewish Century, where he said the 20th century is the Jewish century, and how Jewish, I guess, ideas and values have predominated and shaped modern America. And so there is open sort of bragging about this. But then again, if you point out negative aspects of such Jewish influence in modern America, you're immediately called an anti-Semite. But you can't boast about shaping American culture, take credit for it, and without taking some responsibility for it. You can't have it both ways. But then again, if you do control public discourse and you have the ability to censor, imprison, terrorize, and disrupt people's lives, for the time being, you can get away with it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, now the series began as obscuring the Jewish issue in alt media. So didn't enter into main media, because that's, I feel like that's a given.
Mm-hmm.
But by essay number three at the Occidental Observer on PragerU, the editor, Kevin McDonald, just did away with the alt media and just made it media. Perhaps because PragerU is large enough to be considered main media. But my original focus was alt media, and because there it's, you know, it's potentially, you know, I don't know, less of a temptation to obscure the Jewish issue. Mm-hmm. Certainly in the alt media that I know, including your program, Our Interesting Times and Powers and Principalities, Red Ice Media, also National Vanguard, National Justice Party. There's other alt media that by no means obscures the Jewish issue. In fact, it confronts it.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you can get an indication what organizations or people within the alt media are obscuring it, usually by the fact that they tend to be better funded, right?
Well, once again, unfortunately, yes. But you know what's emerged in this essay series is the particularly by the fifth essay on Tucker Carlson is the, you know, the phenomenon that many of these main media outlets are losing money, and they don't seem to care. Rupert Murdoch funded the Weekly Standard, mm-hmm. at a loss just to provide some kind of credibility to the Jewish neocons that wrote for that. And Tucker Carlson wrote for that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they really don't seem to care if their ratings go down and they lose advertisers and they lose revenue. I think they have so much money otherwise that the propaganda influence is more important.
Well, controlling public discourse is an investment into public perceptions and creating acceptable, deciding how wide the Overton window will be, right, is key to, again, securing your political control and also amassing more wealth. And so it's an investment, if you will. So, yeah, the Weekly Standard, I think, premiered in the mid-1990s, just a few years before 9/11. And this coincides sort of with the, final stages, the coup de grace of the neoconservative takeover of American foreign policy, which, you know, really 9/11 was a key to that. The hysteria behind and the fear that was churned up, and also the war fever, of course, all to the benefit of, you know, of one little country in the Middle East, right?
Mm-hmm. And Rupert Murdoch fully supporting that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, building up the neocon presence in the media and their credibility, and yeah, really culminating in the events of 9/11 and the war on terror, all on behalf of Israel. Certainly, that's clear. I didn't know the role that Murdoch played until, you know, I researched for the Carlson essay.
Well, it's a huge Newsmax is a huge corporation, and it's going to be tied into these things. Now, you done some research in the background of Rupert Murdoch himself. And now I know he had some connections with Israelis who helped him, expedite his U.S. citizenship. But I didn't know that you identify him as having a Jewish, is it a mother?
Yes, from what I understand, her name was Green. His mother was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But can I, before we go on, I want to mention the number two essay in this series because
sure.
it... I have another essay series going called Jewish Control of U.S. Presidents. And number two in that series is on Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yes, I read that. It was a good piece.
No, thank you. Number one was Woodrow Wilson.
Yes. Another good piece. I read that one, too.
So this number two in obscuring the Jewish issue is banking dynasties. And Global Research, which I consider an alt media outlet,
mm-hmm.
posted a essay, How Private Interests and the Banking Dynasties Control Washington. And again, you know, it talks about the founding of the Federal Reserve and how there were eight long established banking families that owned all the stock and pretty much the founders of the Federal Reserve. And in my research, suspecting this was obscuring the Jewish issue, seven of the eight families are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And the real revelation here was they were largely intermarried. The seven of them form a kind of extended Jewish banking family dynasty clan. And I feel like that's the pinnacle of the pyramid of power in the world.
Yeah. You have, I read that article by Dean Henderson. Right. And he writes about the, he's the book about the oil companies, and you know, the Seven Sisters. And you read all these names, and you know, there is a prominent representation of Jews in all those names. Of course, the Rothschilds, the Schiffs, the Warburgs, you know, and of course, the if you read the history of even the Rockefeller fortune, its ties to National City Bank, which I think was a Rothschild bank, and also J.P. Morgan, I believe, was an agent of the Rothschilds. Lisa's father worked for the Rothschilds in the 19th century. And if you kind of trace the rise of financial power within the British Empire, of course, you cannot ignore the name or avoid the name of Rothschild, and how these banking families sort of rode the British Empire, used it to amass huge fortunes. And really, by the middle of the 19th century, the British Empire had become a Jewish subsidiary, because they had taken over the Bank of England. They controlled the British Mint. There is that story about Waterloo, right, where Rothschild shorts the he starts a whispering campaign that Napoleon won, which causes a panic, which causes the British pound to plummet. He goes long on it, and then that's his financial coup, his control of information. And then from that point on, and also in the 19th century, sort of you had the pinnacle of the British Empire. And is at this point where all these aristocratic families are cash poor, but they're land rich because they had stolen all the property during the British, the English Reformation. But they wanted to build these large manor homes, and they went into debt to do this. And of course, the Churchill's family, Churchill's father, was heavily indebted for the Rothschilds. And of course, Winston Churchill himself was bailed out several times by Jewish financiers, and that probably factored into his policies, at least his belligerent policy towards Germany in the 1930s. Mm-hmm. And also, you also have Cecil Rhodes, who was also a Rothschild agent in Africa. People identify these things as sort of British imperialism, but behind that, you have all these Jewish financial interests. You have the purchase of the Suez Canal, which is financed by, I think, Lionel Rothschild, at the request of, what's his name? The Jewish prime minister?
Disraeli.
And Disraeli, I think in his book, Königsby, he writes that, you know, the world is governed by personages we never know. He's talking about Rothschild, of course. What I'm getting at here is when you talk about Jewish power in the media, why it's obscured, there's sort of a history in alt media and research in obscuring Jewish influence and sort of saying it's Britain, it's the British Empire, the British Crown. It's the Opium Wars, but of course, who's behind the Opium Wars? It's the Sassoon family, Jewish, Rothschilds, these Jewish families, and not exclusively Jewish, of course, because you also have the rise, sort of in America with the Russells, the Russell Trust, and Skull and Bones, the Clipper ships, and these things. So it's not exclusively Jewish, but it is prominently Jewish. The point being here is that in the 19th and early 20th century, there was sort of a conversion, so where the Jews sort of commingled, were able to mingle them, inveigle themselves, and also mingle with the British aristocracy, buying peerages and things like that, and becoming part of the establishment, largely through finance and also through the exploitation of usury and interest. Buying up property. So then we have this conversion where people aren't necessarily, they're not incorrect in pointing out something like Skull and Bones, the Rhodes Trust or Oxford and these things, but it's commingled at this point and there's no longer really a distinction here. And by the 1950s and 60s and 70s, the sort of this WASP's Jewish Alliance, the Jews became no longer the junior partner. They became the primary partner in this deal. The dog began to wag the tail began to wag the dog after the 1970s, right?
I would, if we had to pinpoint a year, it would be 1980 when the Jews installed Ronald Reagan.
And there's your article, yeah, about Ronald Reagan. So
good
I've
point
talked,
about
I'm
that,
sorry,
so.
I've talked enough, so I'll let you talk.
Oh, you had some good things to say.
Yeah.
I want to respond to some of them. But that was basically Jewish media that installed Reagan, the MCA and Lou Wasserman, and before that, Jules Stein,
mm-hmm.
and the Jewish mob attorney, Sidney Korshak.
Oh, yes. Did you ever read Super Mob?
No, I didn't.
I recommend that. It's about the Jewish mob in Hollywood. It's specifically about Sidney Korshak.
Oh, wow.
It's called Super Mob by Gus Russo. He also wrote the book The Outfit about the Chicago mob. But he talks about the Jewish mob and how the Jewish mob is obviously the role of the Jewish mob and its influence, and it's obscured, actually, and blamed on Sicilians. So I highly recommend that book.
Okay. This essay series could go on forever. Almost everything I write could fit into this category, obscuring the Jewish issue in media. But the global research essay had this really interesting paragraph that identifies the eight banking families that founded the Federal Reserve. Quote, W. McAllister, an oil industry insider with House of Saud connections, wrote in The Grim Reaper that information he acquired from Saudi bankers cited 80% ownership of the New York Federal Reserve Bank by just eight families, four of which reside in the U.S. They are Goldman Sachs, Rockefellers, Lehman's, Kuhn Loeb, Rothschilds of Paris and London, Warburgs of Hamburg, Lazars of Paris, and Israel Moses Seif of Rome. I could find no reference from the Grim Reaper. I found no McAllister. But I just proceeded as if this was accurate and examined each of these eight really. I really figure the Rockefellers have some funding from the Rothschilds. And it was just, unequivocal. Seven of eight are Jews. I referenced The Creature from Jekyll Island by G. Edward Griffin. Eustace Mullins' book, Secrets of the Federal Reserve. And neither of those really identifies these groups as Jews. Mullins kind of indirectly or in a mild way. So even that was obscuring the Jewish issue. But, here's my conclusion to that article, Tim. Quote, overwhelmingly, the single group responsible for imposing and operating the Federal Reserve System over the American people and yielding enormous wealth for themselves were Jews. Of these, the Jew Paul Warburg, backed and at the direction of the Jewish Rothschilds, were the dominant culprits. This is of immense importance. It goes beyond even the control that the Federal Reserve System has over the U.S. economy. It leads us towards the final revelation of a Jewish agenda for world domination.
Yes. And obviously the ability to take over, establish these central banks and take them over is key to that, because they can more or less leverage that control to get control of media, and then manipulate finance. And before you know it, for lack of a better word, that is global domination.
Mm-hmm. Do you know the book Which Way Western Man by William Simpson?
Not familiar with that, no.
Oh, okay. John Nocero recommended I read it, and I've been reading it. It's 1,000 pages long. There are just some devastating quotes in that book about the Jewish world control through finance, not mm-hmm. exclusively, but overwhelmingly the control lever that the Jews have over the world is money and finance.
Yeah. Well, what matters here is not so much talk about Jewish control. It's also people who non-Jews, Gentiles who internalize Jewish attitudes about these matters. So if you institutionalize Jewish thought and values into the economy, like usury, institutionalized usury, you have a lot of people who are, Gentile, but they're playing a Jewish game.
Yes, I call them colluders and capitulators.
Yeah.
But they're really essentially race traders.
Yeah, because they embrace, again, what they do is they're embracing that system, and you work for that system, and you run into that a lot. So much so that they internalize it, they may not even recognize it as such anymore.
Right.
People's
It's been
understanding
so.
of economy and finance, or when you hear the common phrase "buyer beware," it's a very unchristian attitude. Let's just say that. No, very low trust, right?
Right.
And
Yeah. Swindle.
it's the sort of the normalization of the swindle, which is what the American economy has become.
Yeah, totally. I was going to say the world control agenda, primarily through control of money, is a racial agenda. It is the Jewish race at the highest level, at what I call the Jewish power elite, are pursuing this on racial grounds. They think of themselves as the chosen people, and I call them Jewish supremacists. So this obviously doesn't incorporate all Jews. In fact, the first chapter in my book is not all Jews. It's I identify what I call the Jewish power elite or the Jewish supremacists as conducting this world control agenda primarily through finance. And they're obviously succeeding, which is a very great concern. That's one of the reasons I'm writing this series. I want to de-obscure the Jewish issue. It's essential. It's kind of like intelligence gathering in this war between the Jewish power elite and the rest of humanity, particularly the white race.
Well, if you doubt that this is happening, you can take. I heard today that there was actually a Jewish professor who was partaking in a Zoom conference, and there was a fee, a stipend or a fee for $500 to participate in it, and he happened not to sign. I think it was a state of Alabama or Arkansas, I forget which state it was, but they have an anti-BDS law in that state where you have, in order to get a government contract or employment, you have to sign a pledge not to support the boycott, divestment, and sanction movement against Israel. And he happens to be a liberal Jew who's very critical of Israel, and he's not getting his $500 payment.
Jeez.
Now, my point is that's a trivial example, but it shows how, well, if anything, the fact that it is trivial shows just how, to the extent of the control and how, well, just how serious they are about it, that they would actually penalize them for not doing that. The fact that that
Yeah.
law would ever even exist, or the fact that a sitting governor would feel compelled twice to go to Israel to sign laws that are supposedly protecting Jewish interests in the United States. I'm talking about Governor DeSantis in Florida.
Yes.
Signing unconstitutional laws twice in going. I guess he has a decency to fly out of the country to sign the unconstitutional laws. I don't know. Is that law binding? If you. But what does that say, right? It's,
I can't imagine that's legally binding. A law signed in another nation that applies to our nation. I also wondered why when it was discovered that Leslie Wexner was the owner of Victoria's Secret, why there wasn't a huge boycott of Victoria's Secret, with Wexner running these child raping blackmail rings, and he was pretty much Epstein's boss. I wanted to boycott, Victoria's Secret, but it's probably easier to boycott Victoria's Secret than Israel, but not much.
But yeah, well, also various state comptrollers will make sure that state pensions are invested in Israeli bonds if they're if you have a Jewish comptroller. So these are, pretty much Israeli agents acting in their official capacity in American government at all levels for the interest of Israel.
Reagan passed that law legalizing U.S. government investment in Israeli bonds. That was Ronald Reagan. He was their guy.
So, but yeah, that was in the 80s. The neoconservatives kind of took over. But then the neoconservatives were considered, sort of recovering liberals at the time. The idea was a liberal who had been mugged in the set, you know, during the 60s and 70s. This was the wake show that the crack up of the Black Jewish Alliance that occurred after 1967. That's when, I guess, influential Jews became more Zionist than they became radicals at home. And people like Irving Kristol, right? And they published, what was it, Commentary Magazine and these things. And they became very influential in the Cold War, kind of cashing in on the huge defense budgets that Reagan was passing in the 80s.
They were Trotskyites, right? They came out of the Soviet Union, the Trotskyites, with their dispute with Stalin, Irving Kristol and Leo Strauss. And then William Kristol is Irving Kristol's son and major neocon in, you know, the second Bush administration with the whole 9/11 and War on Terror. That was Irving Kristol.
Well, the Project for a New American Century. Yeah, that was a whole, was a neoconservative, Jewish den. And of course, they're the ones that called for, rebuilding American defenses and calling, needing a galvanizing and catalytic event, a new Pearl Harbor, if you will.
Right.
And they got it.
In Israel, it was called the New Strategy for Defending the Realm. They had the same, war strategy, balkanize the neighboring nations, split them up into their ethnic units.
And the U.S. was the Yunnan plan. And then there was U.S. was the muscle for that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's an atrocity. These things are just, these are the indications of Jewish power. It's completely out of hand and out of control.
Well, even you have that with the Office of Special Plans.
And that was Richard Perle and Douglas Feith.
Yeah, Doug Feith, Richard Perle. Then there was the spying with was it Franklin? And the Scooter Libby, who I think wasn't he the boyfriend of the Miller?
Miller?
The New York Times reporter, Judith Miller.
Oh, that I don't know.
She's the one that wrote the fake stories about weapons of mass destruction in New York Times and all that.
Oh, wow.
So I think she's Jewish too.
There's obscuring the Jewish issue in the New York Times. Well, no surprise there. The founders were, when the Sulzbergers got involved, they were like the first family to join the B'nai B'rith, the secret society of Freemasons, New York City.
Well, as early as the 1930s, the media was largely Jewish, radio and print, and they could cancel you, like they canceled, Charles Lindbergh. They got rid of Father Coughlin and all that because, got his radio program, got the Catholic Church to cancel his radio program. They wouldn't deliver his newsletter in the mail.
Right.
These are the great liberals, right? So that, cancellation isn't a new thing, of course.
No.
Deplatforming.
I mean, interesting to read the Polish ambassador to the U.S. was a guy named Potocki at the time in the 30s who was writing about, he's writing back to the Polish government, reporting on the absolute frenzy, the war frenzy that the Jewish media was stirring up against Germany at the time throughout the 30s in the U.S. It was, he writes about this official government document, just like this media effort in the U.S. by these Jews. It's like inflaming the American public into like a vile hatred of Germany. It's the power of the media. That's what we're writing about here in this series. Let me mention number three, Tim, if you're ready to move on.
Sure.
I should say there were two others in between, which I just as soon pass over here in our interview, but we can mention them. The Fall of the Cabal documentary series. But the next one that was published at Occidental Observer was called Number Three, PragerU. I have learned that PragerU was a kind of advocacy for the conservative right-wing Republican Party, and it's seen to be a counterpoint to the expanding influence of the left media, the woke in particular. So, and it's considered, pretty influential. In fact, what do they call it? They consider themselves in the mind-changing business. PragerU. So that, and someone sent me a video from PragerU made recently. Candace Owens was the spokeswoman, and it was called A Short History of Slavery, which I consider a kind of reverse propaganda. This video by Candace Owens, you know, kind of made some good points about, you know, the truth about slavery. It's not only white people that are the slavers. Caribbean Islanders were enslaving each other before Columbus arrived. And, you know, other kind of debunking of the woke talking points on slavery. But I thought, okay, well, this is probably obscuring the Jewish issue. And for one thing, I tried to research whether there's a consensus now that Columbus was Jewish. And Kevin McDonald, at Occidental Observer, disputed that with me, and we kind of left that out or made it undecided. But Jews themselves are currently, you know, overwhelmingly bragging that Columbus was Jewish. You know, so and so were the slavers. I go on to talk about the secret relationship between blacks and Jews, that book by the Nation of Islam, which is a great, it's an excellent history book. It's actually a three-part series. And the historical scholarship is excellent, you know, proving the Jews were overwhelmingly involved in the transatlantic slave trade, running the ships, the auction blocks, and owning slaves themselves. But, you know, then I look at PragerU itself. Dennis Prager himself is just, what do I say here? Dennis Prager, so Jewish. He's just in every way, everything about him you can research. His books, The Nine Questions People Ask About Judaism, and then the book, Why the Jews? The Reason for Antisemitism. Well, this is just a winner, Tim. You have to hear the reason. Quote, the authors find the root of antisemitism not in racism, xenophobia, the need for scapegoats, economic depressions, or any other universalizing factor. The occasion for the hatred of Jews they find in Judaism itself. And they say, quote, the Jew carries the burden of God in history and for this has never been forgiven.
Okay. We're just so wonderful. Okay.
Well, there was a lot of commentary on the Occidental Observer article. They have a comment section that's up for probably more than a week. And very good comments come in. And most people that commented on this statement declared that they didn't really know what it even meant. It was like kind of doublespeak. It's hard to even determine what the meaning was. But I go on to say, you know, we know the reasons for anti-Semitism. They're pretty much all the things they said up above. Racism and economic depressions and... media control and usury and just grotesque, perverse expressions of the Judaic religion, like Jewish ritual murder. It's certainly a reason Jews have been persecuted and expelled. And I just thought that was interesting, that what Dennis Prager had to say, you know.
Well, more than a few prominent Jews have commented that anti-Semitism is a completely rational response to Jewish behavior. In fact, they want it because that's the sort of the Talmudic strategy of maintaining group cohesion by provoking negative responses by the host society. So you create fear among the Jews, so they stick together. That's the whole Talmudic strategy there.
Yeah, Theodore Herzl said that in his diary. If we don't have enough anti-Semites, we'll create some. Mm-hmm. We need them. Yeah, that's a complex aspect of it all. I still think there's legitimate anti-Semitism and Gentiles and Aryans and the white race needs to know it. But I looked at the funding sources for PragerU. First I looked at some of the, some of the spokespeople, some of the anchors, if you will, at PragerU. Ben Shapiro, Stephen Crowder, Candace Owens, Will Witt, Charlie Kirk. Of course, Ben Shapiro is Jewish himself. And Charlie Kirk, what's his name? Brandon Martinez wrote an article saying that Charlie Kirk was Jewish, but it turns out he's a Christian Zionist and a particularly avid one. So I did have to watch this. There's sort of a video interviews that Will Witt does. It's, you know, PragerU video. He's interviewing these young black men on Hollywood Boulevard and asking them if they know who Anne Frank was. And a lot of them don't know. One guy says, an actor, right? And Will Witt says, no. But I say, yes, Anne Frank was basically an actor, or her book is basically fiction.
Yeah, this is where they're dumbing down everybody has come back to bite them, because you need, in order for propaganda to function, you need a certain level of agency and intelligence among the consuming public. And they dumb the masses down so much, but the people are ignorant of the propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Right. In communist countries, everyone knew the media was total propaganda. It was not to be believed. You were forced to go along with it under a kind of terror, but everyone knew it was fake. The huge just travesty in America is that they want us to know it's fake, but too many people in America don't realize it. Mm-hmm. They actually believe it, even though the masters of discourse make it so ridiculous. They want us to know. That's my theory.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was. This was several years ago. I happened to be at a job site, working like a 12-hour shift. It was like a communication center, and so we were just monitoring communications and all that sort of thing. And we were able to watch television, help pass the time. And they were doing the television broadcast of Schindler's List. The network broadcast of Schindler's List. It was like 2007, I think, or something, 2005, maybe. And so it's on, and we're in there, and there's this young, like a 20-something black guy in there in the office, and he's sitting down, he's watching, and he's like, what's going on here? Because, oh, this is like World War II. This is like Nazis and the Holocaust. You go, what? What's that? He had no idea.
Good.
No idea.
Unbelievable.
Because he was just so, he wasn't a dumb guy. He didn't certainly was being dumb, but he just didn't know. You know, it was like, where have you been? And they often tend to be very solipsistic and, you know, not too interested in things going around them or allegedly going on around them, you know, but it had completely passed him by because the education, in quotes, that he received evidently was so poor in high school and college. Mm-hmm. It kind of missed out on it.
Well, that's a different approach, you know, that self-defense from media. I've never thought of that.
It's complete.
my approach has been to debunk it and penetrate into it and see beyond the lies.
Yes.
But his approach was just avoid it altogether.
Avoid it altogether. Just tune into his own thing. You know, a lot of people like that. You know, I was never heard of this story, you know.
Let me just finish. So the funding sources of PragerU are Michael Levin. He's Jewish. He funded the Jewish Future Pledge funding for Israel. Sheldon Adelson, hopefully most people know about the lavish donations he made to the Trump campaign and the Netanyahu campaign in Israel. Mm-hmm. He's considered a kingmaker. Organized crime boss, really.
Yes.
And he's dead now.
He got Sheldon Adelson freed, right? And I mean, he got Jonathan Pollard freed.
Jonathan Pollard.
Yeah.
In fact, Pollard flew back to Israel on Adelson's jet, and he was received with a hero's welcome.
And then Jonathan Pollard proceeded to tell American Jews to do what he did and spy for Israel. That's what
No, Jesus.
He did.
It's so
insulting. Welcome.
It's just a blatant insult to the United States. I just find that's just so intolerable. Now, here he is funding PragerU. And then there's Dan and Farris Wilkes. They're probably Anglo, but they founded the Assembly of Yahweh Church, and where they say the true religion is Jewish. So they're the most fundamentalist you know, Christian Zionists.
Mm-hmm.
These are this is the money that PragerU gets.
Yeah, so they're lavishly funded, and again, they're not profitable, but they are profitable to the extent that they're very effective in corralling and controlling the right wing and keeping it properly philo-Semitic and preventing what they call anti-Semitism, meaning criticism of Jewish power and its abuse of power. So again, these things are investments.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess the most startling discovery I made in this was that the CEO of PragerU is Marissa Strait or Street. And she's rather attractive and looks Gentile. She looks, you know, like a white woman. And but in my research, I found out she served in the Israeli Defense Forces Unit 8200.
Well, that's interesting because they have tentacles all throughout the West, and particularly the United States, in communications and high tech, you know, companies.
Yes, they have a spin-off program kind of like COINTELPRO. They incubate private tech companies, something like Oracle, and you know these like mass surveillance systems and the Promise software. And here's Marissa Strait, the CEO of PragerU, is like trained at Unit 8200. So let me read my on the Substack page, Taboo Truth. I ended this essay with like a verdict and a sentence, but they didn't allow that at the Occidental Observer, so we changed the conclusion there. But let me read the sentence.
Okay. Sure, go ahead.
The verdict is, yes, PragerU is obscuring the Jewish issue big time. The sentence, revoke PragerU's license for violations of the Espionage Act and for acting as a foreign influence without registering as an Israeli Mossad intelligence front. Ban PragerU from the internet as violating community guidelines and peddling mis- and disinformation. Confiscate PragerU. Turn it over to the National Justice Party as a genuine news and education platform and rename it Pogrom U. Well, you can see why Kevin.
Yeah, that's it didn't strike me as Kevin's a nice guy, from what I understand. It's a little too brash. You know.
Yeah, he might have legal reasons for not wanting
to. Yeah, yeah. But I suspect he laughed when he read it, though.
I hope so.
No, but it's a serious point because you have an intelligence asset running a major media operation on behalf of a foreign nation. And you could apply the same standard to AIPAC and the ADL, which Jonathan Greenblatt has openly said his job is to defend Israel. Well, then you're a foreign agent, you know. At the same time, they're the most un-American groups because they particularly ADL, because they openly advocate censorship, the violation of the First Amendment, which really what America is all about. If you don't have that, then you really don't have America at that point.
Well, I guess that gets us into the Tucker Carlson essay, because back in 2021, the Anti-Defamation League issued a letter to Fox News and demanding that Carlson be fired and taken off the network because he was promoting the white replacement theory. And that's just what you're saying, how the ADL like violates the First Amendment by demanding censorship.
Yeah, and again, it's by applying pressure. In the old days, it was called dynamic silence. And this was written about in The Fatal Embrace, how they would use that. And they did cancel a lot of people in the 40s and 50s who were very critical of the founding of Israel and what went on there in the late 40s and early 50s. There were a lot of critics. Of course, some say even, you know, there are assassinations carried out, of James Forrestal being one of them, perhaps.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe George Patton.
Mm-hmm.
There were quite a few others. Yes. But yeah, why don't we? I don't know what our time frame is now, but the real meat of our interview today is the Tucker Carlson issue. Is that obscuring the Jewish issue? which, I've reviewed quite a few other theories on why Tucker Carlson was really fired.
Yeah, first of all, it's a top-rated cable news program. I believe his ratings exceeded the combined ratings of all other competing cable news shows in that time slot. So it was a top-rated show. However, he couldn't get much sponsorship because he'd been effectively been canceled by some of these like the big companies advertising. But nevertheless, it was a cable show, and he brought in a lot of revenue, brought in a lot of viewership. So there's no reason to fire him based on his performance. So it had to be something he was saying or his substance. But you suggest there might be something more to it than that.
Well, I suggest it's similar to all the other alt media obscurantism. But, it's important to present the evidence. I do want to say that I don't believe that losing advertising dollars because of the things Tucker was reporting on and the ways he was reporting is a valid reason. And not just because we've already said that the Jews are willing to operate some media at a loss. They don't really care as long as the influence is there, as long as their propaganda. You said it was an investment.
And, well, they control the central banks. So what's money to them?
Right. I don't accept that reasoning. I write about how Jimmy Dore came on. They were referencing the Hill article that Carlson brought on Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And he talked about the vaccine scandal, the harm the vaccine has caused. And Carlson made quite an excellent statement about, how all the other media were peddling pharmaceuticals for the pharmaceutical companies, and he was not.
Yeah, his My Pillow analogy was entertaining, yes.
Right. And he had RFK Jr. on and just slamming the vaccines and the whole COVID lockdown approach.
Did you notice interesting in his voice when he was saying that? I sensed a sort of tenseness in his voice, like he knew he might be cutting his own throat when he was saying that. But that might be – I might be reading more into that than there actually is.
He being Tucker or
– just Tucker. When he was saying it, I don't know, maybe it was difficulty with the what he was reading, or I just sensed a certain discomfort when he was doing that.
No, I didn't notice, but so, what he was saying was so powerful.
Yes.
It felt like it was like devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of shock value that Carlson had over time, many issues and things. But I developed the view that this was controlled opposition and limited hangout, amounting to obscuring the Jewish issue.
Well, he did dog whistle the issue, you could say, read into, but he never directly confronted. He did call out ADL hypocrisy on immigration. Remember, which was, again, the farthest you would ever. I mean, I did not expect to hear that on Fox News, but he did it. And then Jonathan Greenblatt, of course, he isn't the smartest Jew out there. Comes out and you're supposed to try to get him fired behind the scenes, not come out and say it. So they had to take the L on that one.
I don't know if his letter was an open letter, but it became open.
Yes, it became open, and it looked bad. And he looks bad, because he looks like a young Nosferatu.
But his optics are horrible. But
yes.
At the time in 2021, I said the same thing. I said, this isn't real. There's not really a dispute between Tucker and the ADL. This is a theater. They're basically controlling the perception of the Jewish issue, of anti-Semitism, of white nationalism. And that relies on the view that segments of the American public are developing their own views despite the media. And at that point, the main media has to step in and address those issues.
Is this kind of like what people call the great noticing?
That's a good term.
Yeah.
Because, there's other outlets. Certainly, Our Interesting Times is one. People are building up their own understanding outside of the media. And then the media looks like they're behind. And if they don't address it, they lose even more credibility. So they do address it in a very controlled and limited way. And I think that's what went on between Tucker and the ADL. And that's what went on with Tucker and COVID lockdowns and vaccines.
You see this being choreographed, or is there sort of controlled tension, I guess you could say?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say choreographed. I think Tucker's participating. But, you know, I need to provide some evidence. It's more of a deduction than a conclusion. It's somewhat hidden. But there are clues that I go through and, you know.
Well, today he called Twitter free speech, which isn't entirely accurate, right?
I sent that to you before we came on. It's like someone just sent that to me. Like, oh, wow. Tucker made a public announcement that it looks like he'll be teaming up with Twitter. It's going to be his next platform. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he says, he goes through this whole spiel about so much media is lies. Everyone knows it. And there's only one free speech platform left, and that's Twitter. It's like, well, you know, we've just seen over the past few months, you know, Elon Musk like opened it back up to free speech after he bought it. And then, you know, a lot of people I know, Kevin McDonald, you know, National Justice Party, National Vanguard, a whole bunch of other white nationalists and historical revisionists, they just got kicked off of Twitter all over again.
Yep.
So there's and what was so ironic, if that's the word, or hypocritical about Tucker's statement today was he's basically presenting himself as like, well, I'm the one who's not lying. I'm like some of the only media that's genuine. And we're going to team up with Twitter, which is the platform that's genuine. When, you know, that's, I feel like that's completely untrue. In fact, his whole presentation today was more propaganda, more media lies, and really by omission, obscuring the Jewish issue.
Despite that, can't someone like Tucker or Glenn Greenwald or Matt Taibbi, can't we use them? I mean, do they serve some purpose? I mean, my point is that by bringing up some of these issues, then we can, you know, see what they're willing to say, then build on that, meaning the idea that they try to obscure it, but then again, isn't it up? They can only go so far, or they're going to only go so far because their masters tell them to. And then it's up to other people to step up and push it further.
Okay,
isn't that their serality? Isn't that just our predicament? That's kind of what we're stuck with. That's the hand we're dealt with.
I suppose that's one approach. So whatever anti-Semitism those more mainstream outlets engage in, we start there and go further.
Well, they make it acceptable. They push the realm of what they call polite political discussion, and we push a little further.
I take a different approach. I don't feel like that's effective. I feel it's best to go straight to the truth. And I believe many, many more people all the time are capable of seeing that and hearing it. And
mm-hmm. But I mean, there can be a genuine disagreement what the truth is on these things. Like even you, I can tell in your analysis, you there's some diffident, or you're not positive. You're suspicious, which is good. I mean, we can't say we know about these things. This is an epistemological question. We can't say, you know, we're epistemologically sure that this right. is what it is. We can read into his, you know, to some like Tucker Carlson's pedigree and his background and the nature of the media and the idea that why are we watching this guy on a screen? Why is he given this platform to begin with? Why is he making $35 million a year? Right. Would a dissident really make $35 million a year?
I mean, even that, to me, it's a given. If it's Fox News, it's a given that that's Jewish owned and operated. I'd present my evidence that Rupert Murdoch himself is Jewish. We talked about that mm-hmm. earlier, his mother Green. And there's two sources for that, an article by Christopher Bolin. And then that guy Curtis produced an essay mm-hmm. examining that. And that appears to be true. So But there, another way we can understand this is by comparing the current treatment of Tucker Carlson with past treatment of Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And that essay by Christians for Truth, I really like Christians for Truth. I think they might be Christian Identity folks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, they have, I often reference them in my writing. Let me see if I can find that. What did they say? The title itself was like, it was about, let's see. They say, why the Jewish media portrays Jewish apologist Alex Jones as anti-Semitic. This explains why Jones is 100% kosher approved and why he was deplatformed. You see, it's the same treatment as Jones, so Carlson. He started off denouncing Israel. He was a strong, like, he was anti-Semitic. He was strongly opposed to Israel. He was identifying Israel as like the infiltrating the United States and controlling the Congress. And then he pivoted. Then that all stopped, and it was the Chi-Coms. And whatever anti-Semitic content he presents is now carefully controlled. They even point out that in this Christians for Truth essay that Jones identifies the Chinese and the Saudis as running Hollywood. You want to talk about obscuring the Jewish issue. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Saudis also produce a lot of pornography too, right?
That's a part of their Muslim religion. Let's see. I want to read something here. Jones will regularly go on tirades about the mysterious elite or Bilderbergers or perhaps the Freemasons, but he will never discuss Jewish power. That's from Christians for Truth. And I completely agree. We can go on with this, how Alex Jones was basically sheep-dipped. He was like, appeared to have been taken down, was deplatformed. Then there was the whole lawsuit about the Sandy Hook reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Almost $1 billion. And yet I present the popularity tracker, right? Popularity and fame of Alex Jones. How has it changed over time? Well, it's only gradually gone up. None of these measures that appeared to be like, deplatforming and disempowering Alex Jones had any effect. In fact, proposed the possibility that it even increased his popularity. And that was the objective. That was the plan, where Jones and the Jewish media moguls participate together. They collaborate on this strategy. And then we can apply the same to Tucker Carlson.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, he loses his platform on Fox News, and he's stronger than ever, supposedly, announcing his deal with Twitter, and also there's all the news about Fox stock tanking and also the ratings plummeting.
Right.
So he's the beneficiary of it.
And yet, well, think about it. The reason they fired Tucker, or actually it was a ways parting, I call it. They agreed to part ways. And that's probably the only thing we should trust in any of this reporting. That came out in the first reporting was from the LA Times. And they said it was a ways parting, mutually agreed. I'm like, well, that's probably the one thing we should believe, because they're planning this together. And then One American Network offered him $25 million a year. And The Hill wrote an essay called The Next Master of the Media Universe. And I knew this right away. I was like, they're not destroying Carlson. They're building him up. He's going to emerge even stronger, more influential than ever. And, you know, he's going to continue even more strongly to obscure the Jewish issue. And that's the plan.
Well, he did call out the insanity of Ukraine, the corruption, the Biden, family. It's often much of his coverage is a right-left thing. He'll go after the Democrats, although he did criticize establishment Republicans a lot in his programming. He talked about the RFK. He actually talked about JFK assassination, CIA's involvement in that, again, perhaps obscuring the Jewish issue in that issue. that question, people have done research regarding the Kennedy assassinations and the Jewish role in that. But then, nevertheless, is it resulting in any political capital or resulting in any political changes about elections or politicians or policies being advocated that respond to the exposure that Tucker Carlson provides? Is the U.S. border being protected now? Is the Republican Party doing that? Is there more pressure to withdraw from Ukraine? You know, so these things. I don't. At the end of the day, do they actually? Does it? Again, is it just to get us? Is it a relief valve? Is it a direction? Is it obscure it so we don't ask? So it basically, does it ultimately de-radicalize us so we don't? Mm-hmm. The American public is again diverted from looking at the real problems. At the same time, the country is dissolving beneath our feet,
right?
Under the policies of the federal government.
It's obscuring and diverting is a kind of an unstrategy.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed for a long time that overwhelmingly Tucker Carlson directs contempt and hatred and fear and loathing to the Democratic Party and the liberals, and particularly the progressives. And I think that's a positive policy or strategy of the Jewish media. They are inciting this two-sided conflict. This is part of the divide, conflict, and conquer strategy, in this case, the political divide. And they needed someone on the right that can really inflame right-wing hatred against the left. There's plenty on the left doing the opposite. And I've seen that Carlson is doing that. He's inciting the right wing side of the political civil war against the left, overwhelmingly. Like you said, he also will criticize, rhinos and such. But most often his vitriol is directed at the liberal left Democrats. And that's a Jewish strategy for divide and conquer. They have other areas they do that, of course, male, female.
Mm-hmm.
They're continuing on with the class divide, which is a classic communist divide. But there's others, certainly the race divide. These are all like Jewish communist, strategies to destroy the society and replace it with the Jewish tyranny. And Tucker's doing his part from the right.
Now, nevertheless, he did, when he gives some, I mean, not how important a speech is, a speech is just words, but if you listen to some of his addresses or speeches, he was talking about things like aesthetics and beauty, and the talk about the importance of religious faith, and the using things like evil, using words like evil, talking about abortion, when you have a Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, say abortion is good for the economy, that's not a political dispute, that's just evil. And we're getting into Aztec area in this now. He actually said that,
right.
Dealing
yes.
with the equivalent of Aztecs. Pretty good stuff. I agree with the speech. When you start talking about aesthetics, objective truth, beauty, and evil, you're going to run afoul of Jewish power, because they're in the business of weaponizing culture, destroying the arts, destroying beauty, introducing deconstructionism, subjectivism, postmodernism, critiquing everything, undermining everything in society. So you undermine objective truth, so those who control the media are in the position to create their own truth, because no longer can mere peasants point at objective truth to hold those in power accountable. So regardless of whether or not he – again, the question is whether or not he is – this is – I mean, you think it's willing – I mean, he's a witting conspirator in this, whether or not he's an question. Maybe he's an unwitting conspirator in this. Meaning he's, even he said himself, I heard him talk about, he grew up in this. He was part of the problem. And I, you know, for one thing, I know about people who work within the Beltway bubble, work within the system, and how they realize that it's gone corrupt. And that what's the chance that he's actually, he himself is experiencing some sort of paradigmatic shift, or his paradigm is are collapsing. And this, I mean, I know, I all know, it's, you know, I've gone through this similar experience myself over the course of a couple of decades. You learn and you see, and you realize what's going on around, and you get older and you realize some of the things you thought were true aren't true. Some of the things you were told in history weren't true. Now it's different, I guess, if you're in a line of work where that doesn't determine what you're not in the media. So you don't have to read a teleprompter and all that. So you're free to, maybe you're freer to think, where in his realm, he's not as free to think. In fact, the fact that he's so wealthy means he's actually more enslaved because he's a lot more to lose. So mm-hmm. I'm trying to look at it from a human standpoint, how he might actually be coming to some understanding or consciousness of how the system really is. And he's actually said that. Like, good example, he referenced the Building 7 recently. Mm-hmm. Now, what that means, I don't know. He's just saying it. Again, you tend to think he's just throwing it out there.
Well, no, I'm saying enough critical mass of the general public already has some knowledge of Building 7.
Yeah.
So Carlson comes in to seize and control that narrative, mm-hmm. and also, you know, retain some aspect of their credibility. If they don't report on that, they just lose all credibility. But I found an essay that quoted Carlson as saying, "I'm 100% Rupert Murdoch's bitch.
Yeah.
whatever Mr. Murdoch says, I do." So now,
that's 2010, right?
I didn't get the date.
I think
was it that long ago?
Yeah.
But in 2021, in April, 2 years ago, that's when Jonathan Greenblatt sent the letter to Fox News telling them to, you know, ban Tucker Carlson, mm-hmm. fire him because he's talking about white replacement. Now, are we supposed to believe that for 2 years, Fox held off doing that? And during that time, like you were saying, Tucker Carlson is free to say what he wants, report on what he wants. He's not reading a teleprompter. Absolutely not. Over that 2 years and before and after, Carlson is Murdoch's bitch. He says what Murdoch says to say.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory. And Carlson himself pretty much admits that. And same is true with the firing theater, the agree to part ways. Yeah, they did agree. I think they have a plan.
It is telling. This says a lot about our society, that people who are reading us the news become the news.
I'm sorry, can you say that?
People that are supposedly providing us the news become the news themselves.
Oh, yes, yes.
This is something that I've... You know, right. You know, really, you would think if you lived in a society that was truly liberal and free, that wouldn't be the case, because there'd be such a diverse source of opinion and rational discussion. And, you know, he said this himself, and this was one of the things where that Heritage Foundation speech the weekend before he, you know, was, well, quote, fired, lost his show, lost his time, so let's just say that. He said that it was a time, and this is something that appeals to me, and maybe that's your point. You make, is that it's made to appeal to people like us, right?
Right.
He said that there was a time he thought he could simply win an argument by marshaling all the facts and putting together a sound argument. And in a typical Anglo-American spirit, the best argument wins in a free society, the marketplace of ideas. And he says that's not the case. It's power. It's not the
oh.
case. It's power. And it's nothing to do with the best argument. And that's telling, because although he may be, again, that could be a limited hangout, control opposition, nevertheless, what he's saying is very true. And people can take that for what it's worth and run with it. And you can't control that. You can't control that. You know, right. When he calls out the system for being evil, I mean, okay, it's vague enough that it's safe. But how do you control where the public takes that, given the fact that although they're trying to control the flow of information, they really can't. they can regulate it, they can divert it, but it gets out. Truth is, you know, it bubbles up. It's hard to keep down. And that's what's happening now.
Yes.
You know, this, since 2016, 2017, this frantic attempt. I mean, they're maneuvering their censorship since 2017 has been so over the top. It's become normalized now. You know, like the term hate speech. That's hate speech. Well, that's what you say. You just disagree with me. I think what you say is hate speech. So now it's just a question of power. A question of power. Who can shut who up?
Carlson says it's not facts anymore, it's power. And one point I'm making is he's not saying it's Jewish power.
Yes.
And if it's evil, he's not saying it's Jewish evil.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that controlled opposition, mm-hmm. that limited hangout. And yet when, you know, the LA Times article said the number one reason that Carlson was fired, I would summarize as anti-Semitism. The Grossberg lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was a woman was appointed to Carlson's team, and then she claims she experienced anti-Semitic comments and a hostile work environment. She's suing Carlson in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
And the LA Times article said that's the number one reason, anti-Semitism. So I refer to the Christians for Truth article about Alex Jones, why he's like a kosher-controlled anti-Semite. It's the same thing. That's why they're featuring the reason why Carlson's being fired or parting ways is he's an anti-Semite. It's like that's totally controlled.
Especially when you have someone like Grossberg doing
Grossberg.
An obviously Jewish name. And also her complaints are so ridiculous that they're just apparently they were like Christmas decorations or something in the office.
I heard another reason, which I don't recall. I mean, that's almost hard to believe, but I think they want the news to be hard to believe.
Yes.
You know, you were talking about how news personalities become news themselves.
Yeah.
And there's a long list of people like, well, there's Roger Ailes, but then like, who am I thinking of? Charlie Rose,
mm-hmm.
Weinstein, there was a whole slew of them. Al Franken, he's not a media guy, but, you know, and they're all accused of some kind of sexual crimes and harassment. And so many of them are Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Is that controlled opposition? I mean, remember there was a whole series of these media personalities that were like fired for being like sexual perverts. And almost all of them were Jews. I mean, I have to speculate whether that was planned as well. It's hard to think of.
Even Larry David joked about it on Saturday Night Live.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. Yeah. Why are all these people Jewish? They might be controlling that. They might want us to know that. I think they wanted us to know about Epstein.
Yeah. Some people suspect that that might have been some dispute within the Israeli establishment, you know, the Netanyahu versus that other prime minister.
Ehud Barak.
Yeah, Barak, who was like filmed going into the New York mansion, right? The the brownstone or something.
Yes.
That was given to him by Leslie Wexler for like a dollar or something.
I think they want us to know this stuff. Mm-hmm. Michael Hoffman calls that revelation of the method.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this concept where their power over us gets so complete that they start showing us their power. They show us just how dominant they are. They, you know, reveal their machinations, their schemes.
They making a governor fly to Israel to sign a law.
It's so blatant.
Yeah.
They want us to know. It's supposed to be more demoralizing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could backfire. I think if we get enough people knowing enough, you know, we build our groundswell. That's always happened in history. The Jews always go too far, and the society they're persecuting and destroying rises up, and almost like in the way an immune system expels a disease.
All of a sudden it happens. No explanation.
I'm not sure how suddenly. I guess it does happen suddenly.
Well, I'm saying that's how it's explained. Like all of a sudden, you know, there's never any It's the reaction is talked about, but never the action, you know.
It's like Dennis Prager said, it's because Jews are carrying the burden of God. Well, actually what they say is it's a kind of innate flaw in the mentality of non-Jews. It's just a kind of mania that rises up. They just need to find a helpless, innocent, quirky scapegoat, and they dump on that. And it's a kind of mental illness.
A true pandemic, right?
An anti-Jewish pandemic.
It afflicts it afflicts everybody.
Yes, yes. And Jews are not responsible. They're just the innocent victims. Let me read something from that number five, Obscuring the Jewish Issue in Media, Tucker Carlson. My conclusion here. Let me back up a minute. This is my prediction. Ways parting will boost interest in Carlson's news reporting, depicting him as a martyr to evil Big Pharma or Fox News itself, so that when he resurfaces on a platform that they themselves provide him, now it's Twitter, it looks like, he will have even greater credibility and influence over the public mind. Carlson told the truth, only to that point his Jewish handlers required to fulfill the PSYOP strategy of controlled opposition and limited hangout. The two strategies operate together to confine the range of discourse within a false two-sided frame and release selective inhibited truths that forestalls inquiry into deeper truths. In the Carlson case, controlled opposition and limited hangout operates to obscure the Jewish issue. And that's where I end it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that he's on Twitter, we'll guess we'll get a chance to see, right? No. So is Twitter starting like a video program or something? Can you put like a long videos on Twitter?
Carlson didn't make that clear.
Yeah.
He didn't even say openly that like he's coming out with a Twitter platform, but he just said that's the free speech platform now, and he's a free speech guy. So we will see. I'm the big question I have is, will the content change at all? And I suspect not, no. It'll follow the same trend, you know, whatever the news cycle is. He'll continue in that controlled opposition way. That's my understanding. And his influence will only grow. In the same way I talk about how, you know, when Donald Trump was like persecuted by the FBI for having papers at his Mar-a-Lago, and other things, the phony impeachment trials, that only served to increase Trump's popularity. Even the second lawsuit about the Stormy Daniels payoff, these things only increased Trump's popularity with his base.
Mm-hmm.
And my contention is that's the plan. The FBI participates in that. They build up, they make these people into martyrs, living martyrs, that look more heroic for the persecution they face.
Well, it's obviously clear that the FBI is using its resources to manipulate elections, control public discourse, suppress information, either to promote a certain candidate or to prevent a candidate from being reelected for whatever reason. And that itself is a scandal. Is an affront to what we are told our system, how our system is supposed to operate, how these law enforcement office, you know, agencies are supposed to operate. It's a law enforcement office, right? It's not supposed to be political. Right. Obviously, we know that's not the case. It's always been political, the history of it. But nevertheless, it's now so out the open. You know, the whole thing with the we now know that Blinken had commissioned a letter from a former CIA assistant director for Central Intelligence to get those 52. Former intelligence, officers or representatives to sign a letter saying that the Hunter Biden laptop was all the markings of a Russian intelligence operation, although we could be wrong. Do you love that?
Yeah, I could be wrong.
Yeah, you know, we could be wrong. So therefore, we're just saying, you know, and that because that and that's used as a pretext for suppressing the story.
And
right, censoring the story. Twitter suppressed the story. You know,
sorry, we can't release that. Yeah, and the I mean, the director of the FBI is the Attorney General. His name is Merrick Garland, and
Merrick
he's Jewish.
Yes.
He has to be in close collaboration with Anthony Blinken, Secretary
and Blinken,
of State.
Yes.
Jewish.
So and talk about fake news, abuse of the intelligence agencies. The former director of the CIA, Brennan, you know, who's a former communist, by the way. How does he get to be? He used to be a communist.
John Brennan was a communist.
Yes.
Wasn't he appointed the governor of the Green Zone in Iraq?
Yeah. No, he was. I think he was a. He was direct. He became a director of Central Intelligence for a little while.
Oh wow.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and then yeah, you have this whole thing. You know, of course, with the steel, another manipulation of the intelligence operations, the FISA court, the FBI, they actually purchasing a fake foreign intelligence report. You know, the Steele memorandum. Mm-hmm. To bring about the whole impeachment process. This isn't a defense of Trump. It just shows you just what a circus it is. Now, that could all be get Trump because Trump's a threat, or you're just playing into the whole drama, the whole kabuki theater of it all. Needless to say, as Americans, we should look and say, what are these people doing? They should all go to jail, if not worse.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean, even in my essay number 5 on Carlson here, I reference two video documentaries about Trump and how he's controlled by Jews. He's going to be one of my, you know, essays in the series U.S. control of, Jewish control of U.S. presidents.
Mm-hmm.
The Truth Media Revolution put out that video, Trump is the Swamp. And all the Jews that control Trump and fund Trump and run his campaign and run his media, his business empire. So, yeah, I think they participate in. And Sheldon Adelson was the number one donor to the Trump campaign.
Yes.
2016. And so I think that they participate in these scandals together and, you know, portray these people as living martyrs and then raise their popularity and power.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that's what we're going to see with Carlson.
Well, again, if you live in a dollar democracy, the oligarchs are going to have the more dollars, they're going to control it. And it's be that those groups that are adept in networking, ethnic nepotism, organizing, they are able to corner these areas and amass huge fortunes, manipulate the financial, the whole over financialized economy and leverage that wealth culturally, politically. And that's the situation we have throughout the West. The liberal West, it's very vulnerable to such infiltration.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a profound question that we all have to ask ourselves. So what's the ideal political system? What protections can we, construct to prevent it, to get rid of it, to extract it?
Well, that the
and then prevent it from happening again.
The answer to that question is clear. It's clear according to my research.
Not the NS word, is it?
Well, yes, it would be a National Socialist autarky, a kind of authoritarian, benevolent, authoritarian system of governance and culture and society mm-hmm. and economics primarily. Yes, that's clear to me, and many other people too are learning that as well. Of course, the National Socialist Germans were the most effective at neutralizing and expelling Jewish power over their society. That's the greatest example, and that's what I've maintained in most of my writing is the greatest threat, and that's clearly the greatest solution. Or I should say, Tim, I've taken to calling it the Jewish issue rather than the Jewish problem or the Jewish question,
mm-hmm.
and that my development into that term occurred throughout the writing of this essay series. The first one was obscuring the Jewish problem. And by the end, it's obscuring the Jewish issue. And I write about that in the last chapter in my book, Covert COVID mm-hmm. Culprits. It's an issue is more complex and it has a much more comprehensive resolution than a question has an answer or a problem has a solution.
Yes, yeah. Well, it goes to the deeper question whether a society, a political community, will have a certain goal or telos to it, meaning that it's not just there to be liberal and free. And I would argue that, again, a system like that is is very vulnerable, as ours has been, to manipulation and control infiltration. And at the very least, at the end of the day, we don't even get liberalism on its own terms, you know, because they shut that down because they can't deal with the if you have freedom, of course, and freedom, especially when with technology, when no longer could they maintain the illusion of the First Amendment and free speech because the whole system had gatekeepers. This just the cost of media prevent widespread dissident voices from being heard. So you could indulge the idea of the First Amendment, just make sure that no one ever heard them. Basically, everyone, of course, has a right to free speech, but no one has a right, you know, to have a platform or to have own a radio station or a newspaper. But the internet sort of was a leveling effect for a little while because everyone could go out there and create their own programs, go on YouTube, and these things were gaining traction, and they were losing control of the narrative. And that's what they had to do, sort of, well, you know, take off the velvet and show the metal fist there and shut things down. Yes. And they're working on that now. They can't cope with their criticism. Like someone once told me that Jews have very high verbal IQ. They're very clever and they're very intelligent and they're verbal IQ, so they're good at arguing, debating. And my response was, okay, I grant that. Despite that high verbal IQ, they still have to censor people. Mm-hmm. What does that say?
Yeah. Well, that's a different kind of intelligence. Yeah,
yes. Yeah.
They refuse to debate the Holocaust or much else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the point here is. Yeah. That's exactly the kind of speculation and reporting that we're seeing, you know, across the board about Tucker Carlson's ways parting or firing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you're saying, like, oh, Tucker was reporting on real things that mattered to Americans, and now they're firing him. So look what they're doing, the same thing that you described. They're just like controlling media, and violating the First Amendment. But I think I'm the only, you know, analysis that I've read that says, no, that's actually, it's meant to appear that way, but that's a false front. And Carlson is being treated as a living martyr, and he's going to emerge even more powerful and with more influence.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see anyone else writing in that way. Kevin MacDonald wrote his own essay on the Carlson mm-hmm. issue. We negotiated for like 3 days trying to get my essay into a form that he could accept. And finally he said, I'm going to write my own. And it's, you know, essentially provides a list of the reasons why Tucker was mm-hmm. fired because of the issues he was addressing and then the ways in which he was addressing them. And which is what everyone else did. You know, The Hill and Jimmy Dore and Children's Health Defense and what you call independent media.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, main media. And so far as I've seen, I'm the only one that had this other perspective that it's all a kind of theater. And that's now up on National Vanguard, and as well as my Substack page.
Well, truth. Yeah, it's definitely worth considering. Very, very, very much worth considering. Because at the end of the day, you are watching something on television. And I think it's safe to, I think it's, at least it's reasonable to suspect what you're watching on television is indeed theater.
That's my starting point.
Yeah.
Especially something like Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. it was a revelation for me to discover that I'm reasonably beyond doubt that Rupert Murdoch is Jewish through his mother. Because my previous reporting on Murdoch, let's see, was that in the, I wrote another essay with where I just didn't confirm that. I thought he was more of a Philo-Semite and a Israel firster, but might have been like Anglo.
But he's surrounded, even if it wasn't or isn't, he's surrounded by them. You can't operate at that level in those circles and not be controlled by them.
Let's see, Suzanne Scott is the CEO at mm-hmm. Fox News, and she's Gentile. I didn't really look very much further beyond Murdoch, but the ones I did find were not Jews. Do you know any others at Fox? Or are you talking about News Corp?
News Corp, yeah.
No doubt, yeah. But we do have to name the names. That would be another task.
And also the fact that through interlocking directorates, all these companies own each other.
Yes.
So it's like when they lose the Dominion lawsuit, Black BlackRock owns large amounts of stock in Dominion and Fox and News Corp.
Right, BlackRock.
It's like,
Larry Fink, Jewish.
So the settlement, you're paying each other, you're paying yourself? How does this work?
Well, some people speculated that Carlson was fired because BlackRock increased its stock holdings in Fox
mm-hmm.
just before the firing, or sometime before, and that Carlson's reporting was threatening, you know,
their position, yeah.
BlackRock's investment in Fox. But I say that's a theater. I don't believe that.
Who's the guy, Tom Luongo, who talks about how the Fed, with its constant interest rate increases, is at war with BlackRock because of their position? And that might have factored into this, but I don't know about that. But it is interesting that you have the Fed, which, again, you talk about, it's a whole other thing with the rate increases, the whole zero interest rate policy for 15, 20 years, and the financial records that caused. And now they're raising interest rates, which is undermining the U.S. banking system. Because some reason everyone thought there'd be easier, you know, low interest rates forever, you know.
No. It's always up and down.
Yes.
It must have been 2 years ago. Fash the Nation reported on their studies showed that BlackRock was appointed to be the broker between the Fed and the Treasury Department,
mm-hmm.
taking commissions, overseeing these transfers of bonds. And
yes.
I don't understand it all, but which is pretty much the opposite of what you're saying with this other guy. What was his name?
Luongo? Tom Luongo.
I don't know his writing. But.
But again, it's all financial chicanery. And the whole exploitation and use of debt-based money system and these things. So it's all heavily leveraged, you know. And obviously, the past few years hasn't helped either.
Yes. In my book, I write about a chapter on Jews of the World Economic Forum, how Larry Fink is on the board of trustees of the World Economic Forum.
Mm-hmm.
And there's five other Jews there, apparently not Klaus Schwab. That's still undetermined, but you know, definitely it looks like Rupert Murdoch is Jewish. And I guess the key thing to say is that's significant. That's actually determinative. You know, it's not just a casual thing or just a, by the way, you know, Rupert Murdoch's Jewish. No, his Jewishness is indicative of his operation of Fox News. And in this case, big media performance that he is engaged in with Tucker Carlson. I mean, didn't Tucker Carlson say in his book, Ship of Fools, essentially the point was that they're pushing it all too fast and too far, and basically the goyim are waking up and they need to slow it down and get back to the mission creep, you know. I haven't read it, but people reported on that. That's basically what he says in Ship of Fools.
I have to imagine at the upper levels, nothing's monolithic, and there are people who probably look at what's going on and saying, this is just too crazy. You're losing control. And I mean, there's been some speculation, even like elements within the Pentagon are at war with the State Department because the State Department is heavily Jewish, and they're messing up the whole system that the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex relies on, which ultimately is based on the petrodollar, right? The dollar being the world reserve currency. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who aren't happy with perhaps the plan to trash the dollar and impose central bank digital currencies. And it would be naive to think there wouldn't be severe pushback or significant pushback within the system. Not saying they have the, you know, yours and mine best interests at heart, but when you're trying to sort of collapse a global system, you're going to get a lot of resistance. And, you know, Jews are only what, less than 2% of the U.S. population, less than 1% of the global population. So they're going to need the participation of a lot of non-Jews in their efforts, which they do get. But also from that, they also get a lot of resistance. May not even be consciously anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish. It's just they don't like what's going on. This is, I mean, obviously the insanity. And again, this is chutzpah. They go too far and they lose control. They make mistakes. You know,
on the pace, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what Carlson apparently said. I'd be surprised that there's much dissension at the peak of it all. I wrote about
But they need people at the lower level to participate.
Yes. Okay.
They got to push buttons, and those buttons have to respond. What if those buttons stop? You know, like in the old days, what, the colonels would have a revolution, and they kill the generals and the dictator.
Right.
So what if there's even Victor Davis Hanson's talked about sort of a revolution of the colonels. He's a conservative, uh-huh. Right? He's looking at what's going on, and he doesn't seem to quite know what's making sense of it. But he's thinking right. It's just too fast, too much. I mean, look at the stand-in at the border, the optics of that.
I know.
You know, and the idea that you have, I guess, people, first you have NGOs that can be readily identified, most of which are Jewish, or at least Jewish-connected, Jewish-controlled, that are organizing this entire thing. And being orchestrated, being facilitated by Department of Homeland Security, which is run by a Jew, okay, Mayorkas, and they're just letting it happen, you know.
Bad optics.
Yes.
I can imagine, like they featured General Flynn as one of these mm-hmm. sort of mid-level rebels. That was all part of the QAnon deception. But no, I think there can be some legitimate like pushback. But I believe at the highest levels, it's all coordinated. I wrote something in my Substack, Taboo Truth, about the transition from the unipolar order to the multipolar order that's occurring right now, mm-hmm. and that there's a view, there's a kind of optics that the U.S. is resisting this. But in the same way with Carlson, my theory is that behind the scenes, the U.S. is participating in it because it's largely Jewish controlled. And the Jews in the U.S. are basically participating in the implosion and destruction of the U.S. empire and of its currency. And then like the captain fleeing a sinking ship, they're pivoting to the multipolar world, China, Russia, India, Brazil, all the big populations. So it looks like the U.S. is resisting the shift to the multipolar world, but really we're participating. And something like the sanctions against Russia, which obviously backfired. They only drove Russia into a closer alliance with China and other nations, including Iran, and only hurt the U.S. economically, these sanctions. Well, they knew this. That was the point of it. That's my approach. And so the transition to the multipolar world will occur until about 2070, in my prediction. When you look at the timeline, right, it went from the bipolar world, 1945 to 1990. Then the unipolar world, 1990 to 2030 is the timeline. You have multipolar world to 2070. And then it's the one world government and the Talmudic Jewish paradise on earth where the rest of us are slaves and if not dead. Mm-hmm.
Some might call it the Great Reset, right?
Yeah, so the New World Order, the Great Reset.
And none of this occurs in the context of elections and public debate. You know, we're worried about transgenders and, critical race theory and reparations, slavery, right?
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah. Right.
The collapse of the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency is catastrophic. It's an impending doom. You look at what happened when the British pound collapsed. Mm-hmm. It's just a horror. And they're talking about promoting recruitment into the military using a the drag queen.
Yes.
It's obviously an insult.
Yeah, and you wonder why, if you take the polling, the respect for the military has plummeted 20%. People's sense of community is now less than 30% of Americans believe in supporting their community. And all this is part of the nihilism and relativism and sort of the assault on America that's been promoted in the past 30, 40 years in the culture.
Right.
And so the brainwashing of the younger generations in school,
If I understand you guys, you and Joe Atwill both understand that, featuring a drag queen to recruit for the military is obviously counterproductive and deliberately so. That the undermining of the power of the U.S. military is part of the internal implosion of the U.S. empire. Is that your understanding?
Because I don't think people are that stupid. I mean, at some level, you have deranged people I'll do it because we're paid to do it, but someone had to make the decision, this is a good ad.
They knew it would impede recruitment.
Yeah.
That's the point of it. And that leads to the interpretation that, well, they want to disempower and ultimately destroy the U.S. military power. And these are forces within the U.S. itself, because mm-hmm. they're jumping to the multipolar world. I feel like it's the same concept with Carlson. And there's no reason to think otherwise.
So, okay. So how can people follow your work?
Oh, please visit my Substack site, Carl Hamers, KARLHAEMERS, Tabby Truth. They can look at my author blog at OccidentalObserver.net, TheOccidentalObserver.net. You can click on the blog and find the author by first name alphabetically. And subscribe to the Barnes Review. It's every 2 months, the Journal of Politically Incorrect History. The next issue is coming out any day. I have two essays in there. One was like kind of last minute. The title is, Did Adolf Hitler seize power or was he elected? It's a trick question. The answer is neither. And then my third installment in the series on History of National Socialism in America. Those are my three places. And then there's my book, Covert COVID Culprits. Please purchase through barnesreviewed.org, I think. Could be com.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Always a pleasure.
I'll let you go, and I'll post this soon.
Good night now. Thank you.
Good night. Take care. Bye-bye.